If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 Pacific Standard Time and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for Closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Axar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the One Divine Source. I am Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Axar Command. This evening, our topic is Allies on Your Way Home. You know, within the lower worlds of bipolar energies, oppositions, polarization, duality, there's ever the play between the adversarial forces and the divine energies. These constitute the pairs of opposites. And these pairs of opposites is the gauntlet path that every initiate walks. And in that process of walking and confronting and meeting and facing with the valor of heart these pairs of opposites, one bypasses or transcends them in the spiritual consciousness into what is called emancipation, freedom, or mukti. So just as every excellent horseman desires a worthy steed, worthy of their skill and expertise, so every spiritual warrior desires a worthy opponent. Tonight, our viewing lens is the shamanic petty tyrant. Probably that's the only tradition that calls our best friends, our best allies, our petty tyrant, because they always take an adversarial position in our life. We're also going to be looking at the connection between spirit, mind, and body with relationship to physical conditions in our life and in relationship to our way home. Know this, that every person, every situation, event, and experience in your life is your ally on your spiritual journey. Everything in your life serves in your awakening, strengthening, and enlightenment. The blade of our spirit is tempered by doing spiritual warfare with the sword of our heart, our spiritual power, and knowing that all things work themselves together for good for those who are divinely called to serve a divine purpose. And that would be every one of us. We are all called. We are all chosen. Our task is that we heed the call and respond and choose back. I'm reminded here of how the Virgin that we know as the Mother of Jesus, how Mary must have felt when the Archangel Gabriel appeared to her and told this 14-year-old virgin girl that she was going to have a baby conceived by the power of the Holy Spirit without human agency. What must have gone through her mind? She replied, and it was so beautiful, "Be it done unto me according to your will, O Lord." And I don't think there's a better response that we could possibly make than, "Have your way with me, O Lord. Your will be done, and your will is done in my life." So let's examine some of our allies. City tyrants. The one who appears in the role of tester, adversary, and combatant, or outright enemy, is our best ally on the path, as odd and twerked as that may seem. So, as I have said, in the shamanic tradition, this person is called your petty tyrant. Your petty tyrant is a special soul who, before you contracted to come into embodiment, you sat together and agreed that this person or these persons would appear in your timeline and act as your opponent. he or she is like that burr in your britches, that irritant under your skin, that stone in your shoe, that person that's always in your face and that seems to assume a variety of guises and forms in your life. So take a look at your life. You'll want to probably journal about this when our show is off the air. And you'll find your petty tyrant. Sometimes it takes the form of your boss, your spouse, even your child, a relative, your mother-in-law, your father-in-law, your mother or father, a coworker, school bully, or that person that is taking you to court to sue you, or that person that targets you in some manner to harass and to agitate and to irritate. He, she, or it is there to assist you in your self-mastery, your process of attaining Christ consciousness. If you don't have any petty tyrant in your life, you would have to ask yourself, either you're a totally enlightened, emancipated soul that's living in the higher consciousness all the time, and God realized, or you haven't done enough to bait the enemy. You know, when you really start to be a threat to the kingdom of darkness, the little demons come out, first of all, of the woodwork, and then pretty soon the big guns come in. And again, this is the testing and the trying power that has come in to assist you and to attain the very goal that you said that you wanted to aspire to accomplish in this lifetime. So it's to your petty tyrants that you owe a special debt of gratitude, as they have sacrificially volunteered to play the heavies in your life and to risk incurring your wrath in the process. Your petty tyrant will make certain that you are strong enough to attain that spiritual mountain peak that you're trying to reach into. Your petty tyrant could even pose as your addictive pattern, your handicaps, your diseases. Your body is always talking to you and never lies. So how many people have come to the point of surrendering their lives to the higher power and purpose and destiny through addictions? I'm thinking in my mind as I'm speaking of probably one of the greatest prophets that I know on the planet today by the name of Kim Clement. And he was a South African man who was lying maxed out on drugs. He had just been stabbed by probably some drug dealer. I don't remember the context. But he was lying bleeding to death in a gutter when the Lord picked him up by some human agency, carried him off, cleaned him up, and he literally went on to a ministry that is phenomenal. But he walks the streets. He's like a street prophet. And he speaks to those youth and those people who wouldn't be caught dead or alive in a church. And so he plays a wild synthesizer, a wild keyboard. And while he plays and he sings and he jams, this prophetic word starts to come through him. And he's wild. He has long black curls and wears Levi's and does weird, wild behaviors. And he's awesome. And that is to let us know that no matter how deep the crevasse that we've fallen in, how awful the gutter or the seeming degradation that our life has taken, that too is serving in bringing us to the place of our highest destiny. Nothing is designed to destroy you, to hurt you, to harm you, but to ultimately lift you and to serve you and to be your co-operative in this divine process. So as we look at this, let's look very differently at our life, at addictions, at alcohol and drugs and eating disorders and obesity and criminal tendencies and abusive relationships, and see where they have tested us, tempered us, strengthened us, And if we are emerging victorious out of them, or are we allowing them to put their foot on our neck? We should have our foot on the neck of the adversary, not the other way around. So Sai Baba has said that sometimes the nightmare of samsara, this illusion field that we are all corporately pretending is real, sometimes this ego's nightmare becomes so traumatic that it causes a spontaneous awakening to occur. We shift that assemblage point, as it's called in the shamanic tradition, to such a radical degree that we're never quite the same again. I'm reminded of a little known but very powerful miracle working South Indian saint. The time I heard about her was through the spiritual teacher Hilda Carlton, that many of you remember from St. John's Cathedral in New York City, marvelous teacher and devotee of Sai Baba. And she told the story of Amal Parvati. And this woman was boiling a clay pot of milk and rice to celebrate the Indian festival of Pongal, when suddenly the clay pot exploded, critically burning her, and following in rapid succession, her husband and all five of her children died. This resulted in her going from a simple village woman, like the many you will see in the 80% of villages that you find in India, to a totally awakened saint. I mean, bam, there it was. That real self was uncovered, and she stepped free of the illusion. And so to this day, people pray to her for miracles, and she always responds. The Catholic tradition is full of such stories of miracle-working saints, most of whom met their petty tyrants in the form of religious authorities, persecution, imprisonment, torture, and in many cases, martyrdom. Remember again, none of these scenarios come without our request and consent, and all, without exception, are illusory. You may say, well, how in the world can that be if I'm dying or, you know, I'm whatever? But remember, our body is a thought form. We are not our body. Our life context is a belief system, a matrix of conditioned assumptions we've made about our experiential unreality. And to the degree that we have hunkered down in those beliefs and hold on to them for dear death, to that degree are we subjected to them. At any point, we can take off the cape of illusion and walk free, or exit the holodeck, as I often like to say. But it's a choice that we make. And the reason we stay in these situations is because we're not finished with them yet. We haven't quite sequentially readdressed this past time cell that we seem to be encountering for the first time. Remember, in the eternal now, it's already been completed. There's nothing new that's taking place in your life. So at any point, you can pattern interrupt. It's called NLP. Neuro-linguistic programming. You can pattern, interrupt. You can reframe or resplice, edit, remove, or completely jump into the activation of another quantum pathway of potentiality called parallel probable reality lines. We as spirit, as soul, have that rescripting right. No one but you lays down the laws. No one but you passes judgment. And no one but you has ultimate say in your life. And I'm talking about you not as an ego mind, but as that immortal spirit, that monad, that I am presence, that is who you remain eternally. Another story I'm reminded of is a woman that I met many years ago. I was privileged to meet her, and her name is Corrie Ten Boom. And she survived the Holocaust and years of torture and abuse in a Nazi concentration camp. And she went from absolutely hating the Nazis to Christ-like love for her tormentors. Now, that's a real shift of consciousness. I mean, how can you learn to love Hitler and the Third Reich and all of those who perpetrated that Holocaust? And yet, we have to see beyond. If Jesus Christ from the cross could say, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do," then who are we to not be able to forgive the generally much lesser tormentors that we have present in our life? Because of who he was, he had to really meet the big bad boy face on and face to face. And I'm speaking of Jesus. Another person who has done a lot of study and work is Dr. Jerry Jampolsky, who has started many what are called attitudinal healing centers. And they're based on the principles of A Course in Miracles. And in his process of working with many, many terminally ill hospice patients and children, mostly children, he has acquired lots of stories of terminally ill children and how they have handled the process of their disease and impending deaths. There's drawings. There's beautiful visionary insights. There are visions. There are miraculous appearances. And quite often miraculous healings. But many had a face-to-face encounter with the divine, with Jesus, with God, in the process of facing their petty tyrant in the form of a terminal disease. So let's look at your body, for example. Has your petty tyrant been pain, disability, chronic, or even a so-called terminal disease? Remember, nothing is terminal unless God says so. And that God within you never dies without its permission. And that God within you really can't die. So we're talking about the body appearance in time and space. No one dies without their permission, even if it seems suddenly and unexpectedly. The divine self knows. And death itself is always a six-month abstraction process in which gradually the energy is transferred from the physical, the emotional, the mental, into the higher world, which is why people often, as they near that process of transition, seem remote and in their own worlds. They are. They are shuffling off the mortal coil and going into eternity. And their focus is more there than here. Like it is when you are nearing the end of a, let's say, an ocean voyage, and the harbor's in view. You're not paying attention to the cruise anymore. It's over. Your attention is disembarking and going on with the rest of your life. In the same manner is the soul that is facing the completion of that life process. We've had some in the news recently, some Olympic athletes. One diagnosed with cancer, and another that at age 36, all of a sudden, just dropped dead. Why is that? They had completed their life pattern. So at any stage that the soul seems to withdraw from the physical world and body, it's because they have completed that life path, whatever it was. So we cannot even judge these things. We don't have enough information. But know that there's always a direct connection between our soul lesson, our mind, our emotions, and our physical conditions. So have you looked at your life and your mental and emotional states, your physical symptoms, and tried to understand what they're trying to tell you? We need to be kind of like Sherlock Holmes, in that we must search out the hidden clues and solve the mystery of our life circumstances. Several allies in our life will never lie. Our spiritual heart, our inner conscience or knower, our physical body. These will never lie. Louise Hay, has devoted her entire life to addressing the connections between our physical symptoms and our consciousness. she's written some wonderful books on the theme of healing your body and healing your life. And those might be really good reading for those of you that are in that process of pain, whatever it may be. On a recent Oprah show, they had a guest by the name of Dr. Christine Northrop, a very well-known author and a gynecologist and an obstetrician. And she had some very interesting connections to say between, I'm going to use one of the things she shared called cysts. Many women have cysts, and they're generally benign and generally go away of their own accord after about age 55, she said. And they tend to shrink and do what they do without really any pain or harm, unless they get to be so large that you have to dress around them. And she had a cyst in her, I assume her womb, that she had to dress around. It was about the size of a basketball. Finally, she got tired of it and had it removed, which she said was a very simple surgical procedure. But she said this is the cause that she's found of fibroid cysts, particularly in the womb. And I would assume this would apply to almost any kind of tumor, particularly benign tumors we're talking about here, that we might have. And she said, it's like a baby, a creative project longing to be birthed. So this energy, this creative energy that's longing to be birthed through us, when it is thwarted or frustrated or blocked or ignored, will try to get our attention by forming cysts. She also said that cysts come from shoving your energy into dead-end relationships and jobs. Wow. Huh. How many times have we done that? A recent show that we did was on relationships, and I spoke about how sometimes we will create relationships that are unavailable. Huh? We all know that, don't we? You want that person, but they want everything else but you. Or they're just not available emotionally, sexually, intellectually, mentally, spiritually. They just don't show up. And yet we hold on for dear death to these dead-end relationships. Or a job. You know, sometimes we do jobs just for the paycheck. They're not in line with our talents, our interests, our higher goals. I mean, you can make them that way if you approach them from an enlightened, loving perspective of acceptance and flow. You can make any situation acceptable by adjusting, you know, your attitudinal adjustment there. But many times people are ignoring the call of their greatness and they're settling for less. They're making do. They're marking time. They're not really creatively exercising their divine prerogative to have all of the life abundant that the divine creator has designed for you to have. So, another correlation that, by the way, just to segue a minute back to what we were talking about, in terms of men's prostate blockages and swelling and things that grow in a tumorous way in the prostate area, I think it's the same process. You know, dead-end relationships, dead-end jobs, and frustrated and blocked creative energies. There's also been revealed a connection of breast cancer, especially of the left breast, which represents the feminine side, and unhealed relationships with the mother or with one's own sense of femininity. I would imagine the same thing could apply with the right breast in terms of one's relationship with the father or with men. I would imagine that many of the diseases that we have and the blockages and impetus and frigidity and the things that we have sexually are part of that same process where in some way we have not made it okay to freely flow our love through our sexual expression, through our creative expression, and through our ability to just be free within the flow of life and what life presents. Know this, that you are never divinely being guided to suffer. And speaking of the petty tyrant, I'm not suggesting that you put up with abuse, that you put up with people who are harassing and tormenting and making your life a living hell. No, I'm not implying that. Sometimes a spiritual warrior in you will take the direct action of bringing that person to court or to accountability in some form, or seeing that they get fired from that job if they're sexually harassing or whatever it is they're doing. So you're called to deal with the situation in a proactive and positive way, not to suffer it and go through it as a victim. That's not being a spiritual warrior. You're here to vanquish your foes and to arise victorious, but to do it from the power of your spiritual accountability, responsibility, and awareness, not just fighting and duking it out on the 3D level, ego to ego. That's, you know, that's not being a spiritual warrior. That's playing petty tyrant to petty tyrant and delivering blow to blow, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And that's called living under the law of karma, cause and effect. What you deal out comes back for you to deal with. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about living in the spiritual conscious awareness that transcends those lower levels and operates as the spiritual warrior, as the divine seer, as the divine soldier of Christ. That's the image that popped into my mind. So I would like to do a little Qigong exercise, energy exercise with you tonight. So put yourself upright in your chair and relax. And you can use this exercise in a variety of ways to bring healing, love, and attention to areas of pain and disease. Haha. I've been practicing this, and it really works. So place your receiving hand, and if you're right-handed, that will be your left hand. If you're left-handed, it would be your right hand. So place your receiving hand on your heart, and place your transmitting hand, usually your right hand, on your area of pain or blockage. Relax. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. And smile, and see your smile traveling with your loving energy flowing from your heart through your arms and hands and into your area of pain. In other words, send your smile into the place that hurts. If you are attentive, you will feel an energetic response. So for creative center blocks, like we've been discussing, fibroid cysts, sexual blockages, do the same. Put one hand on your heart and one hand over your pubic area, often called your second heart. Take a deep breath. Smile and transmit your smile and your loving energy to your reproductive organs, to your womb, your prostate, the root and second chakras. You could use this same technique to balance all of your seven chakra centers, which, of course, are connected to your endocrine system. And whether or not they are flowing, you can tell pretty much the state of your endocrine system, which, of course, governs everything having to do with your organs and your health. So these are wonderful, simple techniques. Other techniques that are very, very helpful for releasing energy blocks are connected with Chinese medicine, acupuncture, acupressure. In fact, Tai Chi, those of you that like a simple exercise that was developed by the Shaolin, I believe, who didn't want to waste time exercising, they wanted to meditate. So I understand they created Tai Chi in their meditational inner process, and that, as you know, the mind can't tell the difference between what you imagine in your mind and what you actually do physically. The same processes are activated in your brain. So, therefore, and, you know, as a segue here, Jesus said, what you have done in your mind, you have also done physically. Same thing. So what we imagine in our mind, the consciousness can't tell the difference whether you've done it physically or you have dreamed it or you have just imagined it in your mind. And so that is a way that you can do a lot of exercise. Those of you who are bedridden or in a wheelchair or for some reason are not able to move about and exercise, you can do the whole thing in your mind. You can hike mountains, you can swim many laps in your swimming pool, you can do yoga and tai chi, you can run and jump and play and dance, you can work out on the parallel bars, whatever. And so this is another way that you can work shamanically with your inner self. I know that energy follows thought, and it is done unto us as we believe. And the things in our life, the first law of spirit is acceptance, to simply accept what's going on. You know, in the 12-step program, when a person goes in that's suffering from alcohol addiction, which is actually it's not a moral condition, it's actually an allergic reaction to alcohol. And it becomes highly addictive when you engage in it. Also nicotine, different things like that as well. But the first thing you have to do is to admit you have the problem. And almost always when we have an addictive problem, we don't see it initially because with every illusion there comes a veil, a blinding kind of process that makes us go asleep in that area. And lack of awareness is always the problem. I don't care what it is. It's always lack of awareness of what to do with regard to that situation. That's the problem. It's not the problem itself. And when you become aware of the problem and can name it, in other words, Jesus always called forth the name of the demon that was possessing the demoniac. Why was that? Because you have to name your petty tyrant. You have to name your adversary. When you name it, you can bind it and have power over it. But until you have identified and named it, you're working with an invisible foe. You've got a ninja petty tyrant there. So to get a hold of that ninja, you have to catch him in the light of your soul, shine that spotlight of your divine consciousness through your upper levels of awareness and into that person, place, or thing to see what's there. Once you see what's there and you name it, you identify it, then right back to back with that situation comes the antidote or the answer or the solution. They always come back to back. That's why you cannot possibly handle a problem whose time has not come in your life. That's why worry is so absolutely counterproductive and a waste of time, because not only can you plan against future lack, invariably whatever you plan for, as this might happen or that might happen, you know, the ego is always trying to get itself in a place where it's safe and secure, usually with regards to its body. It'll always come in another way that you never even thought of. I learned that when I was really, really young, and I used to lie in bed at night when I was concerned about something and think of all the possible things that could go wrong with it, figuring I had covered my bases. Kind of a negative approach. But, you know, you try a lot of things when you're growing up your body. But the point I'm making is that if you stay present here and now, today, right now, right now, not tomorrow, not last week, here and now, you can always handle what's right here and right now. For example, those of you that have had a lot of surgeries, I've had like 8 surgeries in my body. Why? Well, I've been many times a warrior and spilt blood in my past lives. So those of us who have a lot of karma with shedding blood will either be a doctor, a healer, a surgeon, or we'll have a lot of surgeries and healing opportunities to work with that. And so, I totally forgot where I was headed with this, but when you look at surgery, when you look at surgery with like fear and dread, like, oh my God, I got to have this surgery and I'm really scared, I'm really worried, you're putting a lot of energy unproductively into something that if you had a little bit more information about it, you wouldn't be afraid of it at all. So generally, you're afraid of something when you haven't really looked at it, when you haven't really brought it into the present moment and meditated on it. If you would sit quietly and take whatever your problem is, ask for the light of clarity and divine guidance to be present with you, fill your mind with it, fill your heart with it, fill the situation with it, and then just simply be still with it and look at it and think it through. Many of our problems come simply because we don't think things through from beginning to end. We kind of jump in somewhere in the middle and hope for the best. That's not being a spiritual warrior. That's kind of you know, letting life happen to you instead of being proactive and mastering your life plan. So get on top of your life, like a little prince on top of the mountain, and begin to direct yourself. Don't let your life direct you. You direct your life. And the first law of spirit is accepting that which is. After that, you simply need to cooperate for whatever is the highest good of all concerned. How do you do that? Well, for example, when my mother was passing away in the hospital, and they had removed her stomach, and she was not able to ingest food. They were kind of giving her intravenous shots. She was very elderly, had terminal cancer, and was trying to leave her body. And yet the doctor came in and said, well, you want us to use, until that gets my emotions going a little bit there, do you want us to use, force feeding? Do you want us to do intervention, whatever? And I said, well, it looks to me like she's trying to leave her body. Don't you think it would be wiser for us to cooperate with the process of what's going on here? He looked at me so funny, you know. And anyway, my mother had a beautiful transition into the fields of light. I was very conscious. I could hear her laughing joyfully on the other side. And they came to me, and they were shocked that when I came out of the room, I was smiling and laughing, and, you know, the pastor was standing there ready to comfort me. And I looked at him, and I said, she had the most beautiful passing into spirit. Thank you so much for ministering to her. You know, you made those last moments just so beautiful in her send-off into her graduation. And then, of course, there were smiles all around. But we need to cooperate with life. We need to cooperate with birth. We need to cooperate with whatever the energy is that's trying to source in a positive flow through our life. If it's a negative flow, we simply take dominion and charge over it. We've been told that we have the power here to bind or to set free, that it's done in on earth as it is in heaven. Through our agency, through our human agency, we are the prophetic speakers of God's directives and actions. We're the one that releases the hand of God to intercede when we pray. We are the ones that have dominion over these world conditions. It's been prophesied and said truly that in the times to come, the light workers of the world will stand up and with one evocative cry will put an end to the war in the world. It's just like no longer acceptable. It's like enough already. Enough with the war. Enough with repeating history. Enough. Finished. And when we collectively on a soul level, come to that collective, accountable place and operate from that collective sword of the heart, we will see war stopped in their midst. We will see those typhoons and storms and all sorts of things stopped in their midst. For example, when this Katrina was barreling down on an area in Louisiana, there was a pastor friend of mine, very powerful, charismatic pastor, that was right, his church and his area was right exactly in the line of that storm. And he stood up and he took charge over that storm. And he rebuked it, and he rebuked the spirit of destruction that was fueling that destruction, that was whirling and headed towards the Gulf Coast. And he said for a moment, you could see the storm falter, get confused in its energy, and it stopped. And the weatherman couldn't understand why it was like stopped, kind of stopped in its tracks. And then it slightly veered off to the right, and unfortunately it hit New Orleans. It missed entirely the pastor and his area, but it did go to an area where obviously that was where it was destined and had to hit for who knows what divine purpose or not divine purpose, because God never wills destruction, but let's say karmic. Whatever the karmic draw to that area was, which I certainly would never speculate to guess on. That's God's business, certainly not my business. Or the Lords of Karma, it's their business, not really God's, but the Lords of Karma, which are a group of beings that supervise the outworking of national group and individual karma. And they have a board, just like the Office of the Christ is a board. The councils of light or various councils of intergalactic board members, the hierarchies of each planet have a board or a council. You have the council of Shambhala in the Himalayas here. You have the council of Telos and Lesser Shambhala in Telos and Mount Shasta. You have all of these governing councils of elders and wise ones that chart out the best possible working out scenario of obligatory, what's called sinchit karma. This is packets of karma which are designed to be worked through, dispersed, or transcended and dissolved in any given lifetime or historical period. As I've said in previous shows, what we're seeing now is the working out and confronting of Lemurian karma. In Lemuria, we had moved from the etheric through the splitting into the polarities of male and female, and maybe even in the root race before that, the Hyperbian or the Polarian. Perhaps we did it there, I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest. But what we were dealing with in Lemuria, in the latter portions of Lemuria, was sexual expression, which then became orgiastic rituals where sex was combined with mind control and generating psychic force fields of energy, very similar to what they tried to do in Montauk, or did in Montauk. And that, of course, eventually those souls reincarnated into the Atlantean root race and went even a step further with it and brought it into, eventually, after many thousands of years, because Atlantis, I believe, lasted 150,000 or more years. And so it was a long root race. But in that process, again, you had the working out of using biophysical energies for manipulative control of people's minds and emotions, much like we do today when we misuse the influencing factor we have in media, when we try to get people by embedded information and triggers to buy certain products and advertising. That would be today the modern-day equivalency of that same mind control, and it's basically bottom-line sorcery and black magic. It becomes sorcery when it's mixed with drugs. So today, a manifestation of that would be the drug pusher, or the date raper who puts the drug in the drink, or the person that injects someone on the dance floor with whatever. So you have that same karmic pattern working through today that had its roots in Lemuria, which is sexual union for power and for reasons other than love and procreation. And then you have the use of hallucinogenic drugs, not to make contact with the inner realms, but to influence and to benumb and benight the mind so it can be weakened enough and the consciousness of the person could then be controlled or enslaved. So today in our dear sweet world, we find a lot of these unfinished business scenarios coming up as karma once again that must be faced in what I call the sieve that catches all things that haven't passed through, can't pass through to the fifth dimension. That sieve is the fourth dimensional barrier that keeps unprepared consciousness from moving into the higher fifth dimensional world. The fifth dimensional world has descended. The new Jerusalem is present. It is fully descended now. It is fully available. It is fully possible to transfer your consciousness now to the new earth, which is totally restored in its pristine original Edenic state. No pollution, no crime, no war, no big cities, no money, hallelujah, no bills, no disease, and incredibly long lifetimes, if not immortality. Because once you learn to really function consciously in Merkaba, you have no death. And Jesus proved that by doing what he did in his resurrection. So we are in that now. It's available for us. And it will be completely, irrevocably, the life and the world that we have around us by, some say, in the Mayan calendar, 2012. And then they mentioned seven moons that follow that 2012, which would, I guess, be 7 months. And so we can expect, as an energy wind at our back, let's say, a cyclic wind at our back, that the elders have had the wisdom and the perspicacity to lay out for us in the Mayan calendar, the Mayan codes, to show a little bit of the significance of the time that we're in. And that's why it is so mandatory for us to clear our karma, face our petty tyrants, find a way to go over your obstacle, around your obstacle, tunnel through them, or go under them, or fly over them. But whatever you do, don't let anything block that onward progression. And the onward progression, you know the saying, carpe diem, seize the day. You've got to seize the day. You've got to seize the opportunity and come into acceptance and cooperation with what's present in your life, the energetic dynamics. Whatever card deck is, whatever has been dealt you as your play, play it. But play it from that empowered state. Your place of power is knowing that you are never a victim. That every condition in your life is leading you to a greater good. Think about it. I don't care what it is. There's a silver lining. There's a good payoff. There's a blessing. Someday, in some place, you're going to look back on everything in your life and you're going to say, I wouldn't change a jot or a tittle. I wouldn't change a single thing in my life. It was perfect. And you're going to turn and bless every petty tyrant, every conundrum that you found yourself tied up in, every single disaster. You're going to absolutely bless the whole thing. And you're going to laugh. You're going to laugh a lot because it's all been a play in consciousness. Nothing has ever touched you. Nothing can ever touch eternal love, immortal spirit, that is ever at home in the heart of God. You've never left God. You've never left home. You've never left the divine realms. You've just projected a little beam of consciousness from your mind, which took form, just like a raindrop picks up dust on its way down to the earth. You picked up the dust of the different dimensional realms and wove them into clothing or bodies so you could operate on each of those levels. But in highest truth, you have never left the heart of God. So for global healing, I would like to segue again into our healing process and our exercises. For global healing, very, very effectively, get yourself one of those globes, you know, that you can sit on your desk, or a map. A map will work just fine. Or even your computer screen with a Google picture of the earth, whatever works for you, or a picture of the earth. And do the same process that we did with bringing light and love to your body. Put your hand on your heart, and that would be your left hand. And take a deep breath, smile, and transmit your smile through your loving blessing, through your arm and your directive hand, your right hand, onto that area of the globe or planet that needs the ministry that only you in the human body can provide. And speak the peace of God. Really good thing to say is, I love you. God bless you. Peace be still. I give my peace to you. Or, in the name of Christ, I bestow the peace of God on you. Whatever your words are, let that be the intention. You can do the same process for your plants, your crops, your children, your pets, photographs. Photographs of your enemy or your friends or your courthouse where your trial is going to be or your prison if you're incarcerated. There is nothing that you cannot have victory over by acting from your Christ-conscious self. Again, the principle from the Course in Miracles, there is nothing my holiness cannot do. My holiness blesses you. And put the name down. And then name the person, and your holiness blesses me. I remember when I was living in London for 6 months in the year 2000, I was going to go on a tour, and I was waiting for the tour guide. And it just so happened we were standing outside of London Tower, where they'd had all the torture devices and all that awful stuff going on. And I was doing the Course in Miracles the day that I was on the lesson that said the very thing I just quoted. There is nothing my holiness cannot do. My holiness blesses you, Tower of London, and all of you who perpetrated torture. And your holiness blesses me, all you torturers and torturees and all of that. And I stood there for half an hour and waited for the tour guide, which never showed up, actually. And I had to laugh because I had been placed there specifically to do that particular exercise from the Course in Miracles on that day. So just know that there is nothing your holiness, and when I say holiness, I mean wholeness. That's what it means. Your wholeness. There is nothing you as a whole spirit, as a Holy Spirit. There's nothing you cannot do. And your wholeness is your holiness. And your holiness and your wholeness is sufficient. It is the grace of God in you and through you. And it blesses the world. So say that to your petty tyrants and see how they really are your helpmates and your allies on the way home. And tonight we're going to close with a little song. I'll take a deep breath. You and I are one. You and I are one. Makes no difference who you are. You and I are one. You and I are one. God evening, and Adonai.